All right. Characterizing CFC stock, the only thing I'd say here, and it's kind of fundamental to what's going on with all of expense allocation, is TCGA created two types of assets that didn't really exist in the old system. And that's a bit of an overstatement. It created one type and it gave a much larger role to a second type. The first type of asset is the exempt asset, and the second type of asset is the partially exempt asset. Exempt assets, as we'll see, are assets that are basically throwing off exempt dividends under 245 Cap A. Partially exempt assets are assets that are throwing off reduced tax income GILTI, because we get a 50% deduction under Section 250, so we're paying tax at half the rate. Those two new categories are sort of captured in Section 864E to some extent. That was a provision that was written a long time ago in the 86 Act. It was designed to prevent banks who were buying tax-exempt bonds and putting them on their balance sheet to get an interest expense answer. And so the rules under 864E just said, well, let's just ignore them. Well, it turns out ignoring them probably isn't the right answer, because tax-exempt assets, partially exempt assets, they all attract interest expense, or should, because they're funded by debt just like any other asset. So that policy isn't a perfect policy. It was a solution to a narrow problem. That narrow problem has now expanded, where in light of the regulations confirming that the way GILTI assets with this 50% deduction operate is just like stock with this similar 50% DRD, means that you went from a very small number of taxpayers with a very small amount of assets to GILTI assets as whole. So it's a very significant amount of all the assets held by U.S. multinationals, full stop. So you've got these two new categories of assets, and the last thing about them is they both do different things in the system. 864E3 assets, these partially tax-exempt assets, use the old rules from the 86 Act, which had said ignore the asset, or in this case, half of the asset. What does that do for expense allocation purposes? It's good news, bad news. Good news is all your GILTI assets come in at half the value. Bad news is that other, to the extent you didn't allocate expenses to GILTI, they have to go somewhere else in the system. And going somewhere else in the system is good if it goes to U.S. source income. Bad if it goes to foreign source income somewhere else in your foreign tax credit limitation. You can contrast that with fully exempt assets, which were created, and that's under 904B4. Those assets, they actually attract interest expense, and therefore the right answer, because they are funded by interest like all these other assets. When they attract the interest, though, the interest stays there. You don't ignore the asset. It all is allocated to the tax-exempt asset, but then you throw those expenses away. That's important, because throwing the expenses away means that those expenses don't get allocated anywhere else in the system, and importantly, not to other foreign tax credit baskets. So those are your two kind of assets.
But you also throw them away in the denominator of the foreign tax credit limitation.
Worldwide taxable income.
You really kind of do deny the deduction for those in the denominator of the foreign tax credit limitation. By increasing that denominator, you reduce the amount of U.S. tax that's viewed as being attributable to your foreign income.
Exactly.
So not all good. There's some taxpayers were a little bummed when they saw their result under 904B4.
There is no doubt that there's an adjustment to the denominator that is, as I understand it, intended to capture the fact that, going back to the very beginning, these deductions were deductible for taxable income purposes. So they did reduce your U.S. tax rate. And the way that gets captured in the fraction is effectively to reduce the tax rate that you use. So when you do your foreign tax credit limitation, the old assumption that if I'm paying 21% tax, that means I can take my income of the basket, multiply by 21%, and get the right answer, no longer applies. Because the denominator adjustment effectively pushes down the effective tax rate, and so you end up with less income in each of your baskets. And for some taxpayers, it doesn't completely eliminate the benefit of the deduction, but it does reduce the value of 245B. And for some taxpayers, a huge issue.
Yeah, I mean, I think a number of people can identify this in this room. I mean, in the oil and gas industry, particularly with upstream oil and gas companies, because historically, because of things like immediate deduction of IDC, our taxable income could be quite variable. And so because of that, ODLs are fairly common. Especially in the upstream space. And so what we found ourselves with, I mean, especially, again, looking at an upstream oil and gas company, your ability to generate 904s organically in any given year is quite constrained. And so when you've incurred an ODL, And you've got credits associated with that ODL that have cleared the 907 hurdle, and now they're 904 GL. If something comes along to change the fraction, as Michael was referring to, the worldwide taxable income, so that suddenly now your ability to utilize those credits has been impaired. When you turn the ODL, the income isn't going to change. And I think, I know for a fact, a lot of people in this room were stuck in that situation, and we're really hurt by that.